You know, family members don't often get along in business. Apparently you and Cousin Joe, your brother Charles, Cousin David Jr., all got along.
We got along, but David, in the early 60s, left the company and went off and started an engineering business of his own, separate business. Then 10 years later, he came back as a director in the company. But after the early 60s, he was not an officer of the company. There was a 10-year hiatus there that he was out.
Your brother Charles, then, how long did he stay?
He retired in the early 70s. I retired at the end of 78.
And then that's when Joe became...
That's when Joe came in, yeah.
Talk about MAPCO, Mid-America Pipeline Company, its beginnings.
We got the... I'd say I got the idea that a lot of times you've got to create your own opportunities. So I started in our engineering business, a group of the young engineers, to develop concepts of where pipelines might be needed and see if we could develop an interest in somebody financing them and owning them. We created this idea of the Mid-America Pipeline. We got one of the railroad companies, and then they got the New York Central interested in it. And finally, that's where Bob Thomas came in. We had the pipeline all conceived, and we finally went through Bob Thomas and the railroad company and his sources there. They arranged the financing, but we worked out a deal, and this was about 1960, I guess. We designed it, bought all the right-of-way, bought all the materials, supervised the construction. I think it was about 1,100 miles and a bunch of pumping stations. It was a total turnkey job. Then turned it over to Bob, who became the CEO of it. Of course, he ran it successfully. And then eventually we bought the company, and I think it was 98.
Weren't cross-country pipeline companies scarce? The margin was very thin on that kind of work?
Yes, it was. We did another one that I developed that was very interesting, a much smaller one, at Las Vegas. It was growing like mad, and they were getting all their gasoline with tank cars. We said, well, now that's sort of silly. They need a pipeline. So we designed one. We never could get it financed, so I went to the chairman of Union Pacific and told him we wanted to build this pipeline and cut them out of hauling gasoline on their tank cars. And I said, you ought to own this pipeline. He didn't know anything about pipeline. Finally struck a deal with him. They would own 35%, we'd own 65%, and they would put up all the money. We built it. We ran it for about 7 or 8 years, and then we sold them the other 65%. They own 100% of it now. That's called the Cal-Nev Pipeline, California-Nevada Pipeline.
You've already referenced this. The final pipeline job was in Alaska with the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
Alyeska Pipeline. It is Trans-Alaska, but it's from the Prudhoe Bay down to the coast.
And you had two sections of that?
Yeah, there were five sections, and we built the northernmost two sections from Prudhoe Bay across the Brooks Range.
Was that profitable for the company?
Yeah, it was such a complicated job. It was what you call a fee job. It was a cost plus a fixed fee. You never knew what was going to happen.
Why?
Weather-wise and changes, and there were unknown conditions, muskeg and whatnot. If you wanted to do a lump sum on it, you would have to price it so high to cover yourself for contingencies that everybody agreed it was better to do it on a cost-plus basis, where you bid on the size of the fee that you charge. All you did was manage it.
Why did you take that job? Was it lucrative?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was a job that, of course, had high visibility. And yes, we made a good fee out of it. We did an earlier pipeline job in 1954 up in Alaska, which was really quite fascinating. We built a pipeline from Haines, Alaska, which is the northernmost ice-free port, up to Fairbanks, Alaska, to the air base up there. And that was 800 miles of pipeline. It was really a fascinating thing, working up in the muskeg. We had to develop ditching machines that almost were like an ice pick that had to go digging through ice to dig a ditch. And I remember how cold it would get up there. It was unbelievable.
You were in your 40s, I think it was, and you were set to be on the cover of Time magazine in 1966.
Mm-hmm.
And why didn't you make the cover of Time?
The acquisition of Great Lakes and how it was done with the leverage. It was called the largest for cash transaction that had been done in business with the highest leverage ever. And I spent 10 days with all the reporters and photographers up in New York being interviewed and going over all the details of the project. And it was going to be the feature story in Time. As I told you earlier, $287 million was the value of the transaction. A week before Time was to be published, Howard Hughes sold TWA for $440 million in cash. And we got a little half-page article in Time, and Howard Hughes got the cover. But it was interesting.
Did you ever meet him?
Never did. Not many people did, I don't think.
It sounds that way. Then your uncle Miller dies at 72, and Dave dies at 83.
Yep.
What were their qualities? What did they bring as you think about them?
Curiously enough, Miller was the younger brother. He was CEO, and he was the financial man and the planner. Dave liked to be out in the field and oversee the construction work. That same parallel happened. I was the younger brother, and I liked to be out in the field too, but I also liked the planning and the financial side of it. And perhaps I was a little bit more aggressive than some of the others. Yet we worked as a family and as a team and worked very well. So,
did you draw qualities, you think, from Miller and Dave?
I think absolutely. It was very unusual that we took over at our early age, but as it happened, what really caused it all is that when President Truman decided to make this dramatic change in the tax law, they didn't have anybody to put together the change and could do it swiftly. So, as luck would have it, almost, again, fatalistic, we were the only ones available to take over the business. We conceived this idea that I explained to you earlier.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever meet Truman?
Never did.
Did you ever meet any presidents at all?
The only one I ever met was Jerry Ford. He went to Yale, you know. I did visit with him in the Oval Office. Very delightful gentleman.
In 1973, Business Week called you a polished and adroit financier. On the prowl again, hunting for a new acquisition. It is part of John Williams' trademark to move into an industry before anyone else spots its potential. That's probably accurate?
In a sense, in the fertilizer business, I got the idea of going into that. I scouted around through networking as to who was the brightest individual in the business, and I worked around to get to know him. I did and made a deal with him and persuaded him to leave what he was doing and join the company before we'd had $1 worth of fertilizer activity. So before going into the business, I knew I didn't know anything about it except what I thought about it. We had our leader in place before we got there.
And who was that?
A fellow named Kenneth Lundberg. And he was very successful in running it. We combined the Gulf Oil fertilizer activity with the Conoco Continental Oil Company fertilizer business. Conoco had the Agrico, and when we got that, we renamed everything Agrico.